This morning, we're going to talk about Hanukkah, but we're going to talk about, like Paul Harvey would say, the rest of the story of Hanukkah. We're going to talk some about the story that doesn't get spoken of much. And that would be the events that led to this. Okay, so we're going to turn to 1 Maccabees, and we're going to start off at the very beginning of it. After Alexander, son of Philip the Macedonian, who came from the land of Kittim, had defeated King Darius of the Persians and the Medes, he succeeded him as king. He had previously become king of Greece. He fought many battles, conquered strongholds, put to death kings of the earth. He advanced to the ends of the earth and plundered many nations. When the earth had become quiet before him, he was exalted and his heart was lifted up. He gathered a very strong army and ruled over countries, nations, and princes, and they became tributary to him. After this, he fell sick, and he perceived that he was dying. So he summoned his most honored officers who had been brought up with him from youth and divided his kingdom among them while he was still alive. And after Alexander had reigned for 12 years, he died. Then his officers began to rule, each in his own place. They all put on crowns after his death, and so did their descendants after them for many years, and they caused many evils on the earth. From them came a sinful root, Antiochus Epiphanes, son of King Antiochus. He had been a hostage in Rome. He began to reign in the 137th year of the kingdom of the Greeks. Now in verse 11, in those days, certain renegades came out from Israel and Mizzlemini, saying, "Let us go make a covenant with the Gentiles around us, for since we separated from them, many disasters have come upon us." This proposal pleased them, and some of the people eagerly went to the king, who authorized them to observe the ordinances of Gentiles. So they built a gymnasium in Jerusalem according to the Gentile custom, removed the marks of circumcision, abandoned the holy covenant. They joined the Gentiles and sold themselves to do evil. So you see what's happened here? Nothing bad has befallen the land of Israel yet. And the people have sold out to do evil. They've abandoned the covenant with Yahweh. They're going according to the Gentile custom. It tells us very plainly there in verse 15. They removed the marks of circumcision and abandoned the holy covenant and joined with the Gentiles and sold themselves to do evil. So, before we move on here, who broke the covenant? It wasn't Yahweh, was it? It was the people. It was Israel. And when a covenant's broken, it doesn't have to be honored, does it? If a husband cheats on his wife and he breaks down on the side of the road and calls his wife, she don't have to go get him, does she? Because he's already broken the covenant. So we have established right here at the beginning of this story why it is that as we go along in this, Yahweh does not have to come to the rescue at the beginning, does he? Not because he broke the covenant, but because they did. Now in verse 16, when Antiochus saw that his kingdom was established, he determined to become king of the land of Egypt in order that he might reign over both kingdoms. So he invaded Egypt with a strong force, with chariots and elephants and cavalry, and with a large fleet. He engaged King Ptolemy in Egypt in battle, and Ptolemy turned and fled before him, and many were wounded and fell. They captured the fortified cities in the land of Egypt and plundered the land of Egypt. And in 20, after subduing Egypt, Antiochus returned in the 143rd year. He went up against Israel and came to Jerusalem with a strong force. He arrogantly entered the sanctuary and took the golden altar, the lampstand for the light, and all its utensils. He took also the table for the bread of the presence, the cup for the drink offerings, the bowls, the golden censers, the curtains, the crowns, the gold decorations on the front of the temple. He stripped it all off. He took the silver and the gold and the costly vessels. He also took the hidden treasures that he found. Taking them all, he went into his own land. He shed much blood and spoke with great arrogance. Now, we've already read that they had already sold out to evil. So we see when this happens here, they do not have the protection of the hand of Yahweh, do they? His protection has been withdrawn from them. Not because of his fault, but because of theirs. They'd already sold out and turned to the customs of the Gentiles before this happened. And now this Gentile that they thought it was so great to join just came and plundered them. I bet it doesn't seem like such a great deal to them now, does it? It's that way in our life today. There's a lot of things of the world that look pretty tempting. If you sell out, if you compromise your faith in God, your obedience to Him, you might gain worldly things for a moment. But in the end, it ain't going to be too pretty. We go in verse 25 here. It says, Israel mourned deeply in every community. Rulers and elders groaned. Young women and young men became faint. The beauty of the women faded. Every bridegroom took up the lament. She who sat in the bridal chamber was mourning. Even the land trembled for its inhabitants, and all the house of Jacob was clothed with shame. So a shameful time had came on them, all because they had turned away from God. It was the beginning of it. And verse 29, 2 years later, the king sent to the cities of Judah a chief collector of tribute. He came to Jerusalem with a large force. Deceitfully, he spoke peaceful words to them, and they believed him. But he suddenly fell upon the city, dealt it a severe blow, and destroyed many of the people of Israel. He plundered the city, burned it with fire, tore down its houses, its surrounding walls. They took captive the women, the children, and seized the livestock. Then they fortified the city of David with a great strong wall and strong towers, and it became their citadel. They stationed there a sinful people, men who were renegades. They strengthened their position. They stored up arms and food, and collecting the spoils of Jerusalem, they stored them there and became a great menace. You see what's happened here? What's happened here, they tried to make a deal with an evil ruler who didn't follow God. It would be like us trying to make a deal with a jihadist terrorist today. It's not going to work out. It's not going to work out at all. So now they've been lied to, they've been plundered. They've had a lot of them killed, and they've had women taken hostage. And now they've set up in the city of David a fortified city with great strong walls and towers to be against them. Verse 36 tells us, for the citadel became an ambush against the sanctuary and evil adversary of Israel at all times. On every side of the sanctuary they shed innocent blood. They even defiled the sanctuary. Because of them, the residents of Jerusalem fled. She became a dwelling of strangers. She became strange to her offsprings. Her children forsook her. Her sanctuary became desolate like a desert. Her feasts were turned into mourning. Her Sabbaths into a reproach. Her honor into contempt. Her dishonor now as great as her glory. Her exaltation was turned into mourning. And this is what always happens to any people when they turn away from Yahweh, when they turn away from God, is it not? You may have honor for a moment, but it's going to bring dishonor. It's going to bring corruption. It's going to bring sadness, sorrow. Mournfulness is all it's ever going to bring when you turn away from Him. And why I said today that this is the rest of the story, this is the part of the story of Hanukkah that most people never talk about. The reason why it happened to begin with. And I think one reason it's never talked about is we talk about the reason, then we acknowledge the fault were the people's. You know, the Jewish people like to concentrate a lot about eight nights and eight lights. You don't hear them, and about how they overcame the Greeks, you don't hear them talk a lot about why the Greeks were allowed to take over them to start with. And I'm a Jew myself, and I would like for us to stop and think why it happened to begin with. Not just how we were delivered, but the reason we had to be delivered. Now, verse 41, then the king wrote to his whole kingdom that all should be one people. Now, before we go on, where have we heard that before? We hear that same cry today, don't we? Everybody should be one people. How many people in the world say, well, isn't it really all the same, Lord? I had a Muslim guy tell me that. It's all the same, Lord. Islam, Christianity, Jews, it's all the same, Lord. So the king wrote to the whole kingdom that they should all be one people and that all should give up their particular customs. All the Gentiles accepted the command of the king. Many, even from Israel, gladly adopted His religion. They sacrificed to idols, profaned the Sabbath. And the king sent letters by messengers to Jerusalem, to the towns of Judah. He directed them to follow customs strange to the land, to forbid burnt offerings and sacrifice and drink offerings in the sanctuary, to profane the Sabbaths and the festivals, to defile the sanctuary and the priest, to build altars and sacred precincts and shrines for idols, to sacrifice swine and other unclean animals, and to leave their sons uncircumcised. You know what? We're starting to talk a lot about mainstream Christianity here, are we not? This is exactly what we have going on today in our world. History repeats itself over and over because Satan plays the same lies on generation after generation after generation. How many times have y'all been told things like, well, why do you keep those festivals? Why do you worry about what you eat? Don't you know you can eat whatever you want to? Don't you know all that was done away with, all that was nailed to the cross? It's the same old lie being played out over and over throughout history. It's just like what mainstream Christianity is teaching us today. They were to make themselves abominable by everything unclean and profane, so that they would forget the law and change all the ordinances. He added, and whoever does not obey the command of the king shall die. Now, we're talking about history repeating itself. This is the exact same thing that happened with the Nicene Council, is it not? With Constantine. The exact same thing. We saw it way back here before Christ. We see it again after Christ. These things happened then, they happened again, and they're happening again today. In such words, he wrote to the whole kingdom. He appointed inspectors over all the people and commanded the towns of Judah to offer sacrifice town by town. Many of the people, everyone who forsook the law, joined them, and they did evil in the land. They drove Israel into hiding in every place of refuge they had. So we see very clearly here that Israel itself, a lot of Israel had turned on the Jews. We still have that today. If you are the true Jew, like Paul speaks of in Romans chapter 2, many people who claim to be children of God will turn on you. And we saw it right here. Israel was turning on themselves. Now on the 15th day of Cheslev, in the 145th year, they erected a desolating sacrilege on the altar of burnt offering. They also built altars in the surrounding towns of Judah, and they offered incense to the doors, the houses, and the streets. The books of the law that they found were torn to pieces and burned with fire. Anyone found possessing a book of the covenant or anyone who adhered to the law was condemned to death by the decree of the king. Again, that sounds a lot like what they did at the Nicene Council. They said anyone caught keeping Passover be killed. It's all the same things that the Roman Catholic Church implemented a few hundred years after Christ. We saw them here a few hundred years before Christ. And I think also I would like to point out before we go on, you realize this was happening at this very time of the year, right now. And it almost seems fitting, all the idol worship we're talking about here, and how they were told to abandon the law and all of God's holy days. It almost seems fitting that it happened this time of the year, doesn't it? Because this time of the year always has been, and until his return will remain to be, about idol worship, about pagan deities, and about all these very things this king was trying to make Israel turn to. Turn away from the law and turn to all these pagan things of idol worship. It seems fitting, and it's always fitting with God, but it seems so fitting that it happened this very time of the year that we're in right now. And we see this stuff around us everywhere today. And in verse 58, they kept using violence against Israel, against those who were found month after month in the towns. On the 25th day of the month, they offered sacrifice on the altar that was on top of the altar of burnt offerings. In accordance with the decree, they put to death the women who had them children, their children circumcised. And their families and those who circumcised them, they hung the infants from their mother's necks. So it was a very bad time. But many in Israel stood firm and resolved in their hearts not to eat unclean food. They chose to die rather than be defiled by food or to profane the holy covenant, and they did die. Very great wrath came upon Israel. Now, here is the remnant. Every generation, there are a remnant of Jews who follow him no matter what. No matter what. And he tells us what? Be faithful even unto death. And that's exactly what they were being there. They chose to die rather than turn from him. There's always a remnant. I want all of us here today to be part of that remnant. Amen. Stick with him no matter what. Because we do live in trying times. We talked about it some this morning. Seems like every Sabbath we come here and we have another terror attack to talk about. If it comes upon us, be the same as these here who chose to die rather than to be defiled. And he tells us, for the end times, be faithful unto death, and I will give you a crown of life. So let's all choose to be these type of people, regardless. Now, in those days, Mattathias, son of John, son of Simeon, a priest of the family of Joab, moved from Jerusalem and settled in Modium. He had five sons: John, surnamed Gadi; Simon, called Thaddeus; Judas, called Maccabeus; Eleazar, called Averin; Jonathan, called Appus. He saw the blasphemies being committed in Judah and Jerusalem and said, "Alas, why was I born to see this? The ruin of my people, the ruin of the holy city, and to live there when it was given to the enemy, the sanctuary given over to aliens. His temple has become like a person without honor. His glorious vessels have been carried into exile. Her infants have been killed in her streets, her youth by the sword of the foe. What nation has not inherited her palaces and not seized her spoils? All her adornment has been taken away. No longer free, she has become a slave. And see, our holy place, our beauty, and our glory has been laid waste. The Gentiles have profaned them. Why should we live any longer?" You see, Mattathias was a righteous man, and he was tortured by the evil he saw all around him, much the same as Lot was in Gomorrah. It tells us the same thing about Lot, does it not? That his righteous soul was tortured day and night by the evil that was going on around him. We see the same thing from Mattathias here. He was tortured by it. He says, "Why did I live to see this?" Verse 14 says, "Then Mattathias and his son tore their clothes, put on sackcloth, and mourned greatly. The king's officers who were enforcing the apostasy came to the town of Modium to make them offer sacrifice. Many from Israel came to them, and Mattathias and his sons were assembled. The king's officers spoke to Mattathias as followed: 'You are a leader, honored and great in this town, and supported by sons and brothers. Now, be the first to come and do what the king commands, as all the Gentiles and the people of Judah and those that are left in Jerusalem have done. Then you and your sons will be numbered among the friends of the king, and you and your sons will be honored with silver and gold and many gifts.'" Now, Mattathias has a choice here, doesn't he? He's being told, just like Yeshua was when he was tempted by the devil. He's being told, "Turn away from God, we'll make you rich. We'll protect you and your sons. Y'all will be great men, and you'll be rich. I'll give you all this stuff, everything you want." But thankfully, Mattathias has got a different plan. It says, "But Mattathias answered and said in a loud voice, 'Even if all the nations that live under the rule of the king obey him and have chosen to obey his commandments, everyone abandoning the religion of their ancestors, I and my sons and my brothers will continue to live by the covenant of our ancestors. Far be it from us to desert the law and the ordinances. We will not obey the king's word by turning aside from our religion to the right hand or to the left.'" He said, "We're going to follow that narrow path. We ain't straying right or left. We don't care what you offer or what you threaten. It's not happening. We're not turning to the right or the left." It says, "When he had finished speaking the words, a Jew came forward in the sight of all to offer sacrifice on the altar in Modium, according to the king's command." So he was fixing to sacrifice swine on the altar. "When Mattathias saw it, he burned with zeal in his heart, and his heart was stirred. He gave vent to righteous anger. He ran and killed him on the altar. At the same time, he killed the king's officer who was forcing them to sacrifice and tore down the altar. Thus he burned with zeal for the law, just as Phinehas did against Zimri, son of Salu." "Then Mattathias cried out in the town with a loud voice, saying, 'Let everyone who is zealous for the law and supports the covenant come with me.' Then he and his sons fled to the hills and left all they had in the town." So he did not follow Yahweh in secret, did he? He didn't quietly slink off somewhere and say, "I'll follow God's commands, but I'll make sure nobody sees me doing it." No, he proclaimed in a loud voice. He did it boldly. You see, it's the way it always works throughout history. God's people need a leader. They need somebody to stand up and say, we're following God. Let's go. So when that time comes, whichever one of us it is, be bold. Be that leader. Because people need a leader. Now, being a leader doesn't exalt you above the people, but we see over and over throughout the Bible, God's people need a leader. Don't be scared to step up and be that leader when your time comes to be that leader. And each and every one of us will have that time at some point in our life. Seize it and take it when it comes. Be like Mattathias. Be bold. Speak out loudly. Then say anything quiet about him, does it? He was a loud Jew. He said, come on, let's go. Now, at that time, many who were seeking righteousness and justice went down to the wilderness to live there. So there were a lot who were seeking righteousness. They were just scared to speak up. They, their sons, their wives, and their livestock because troubles pressed heavily upon them. And it was reported to the king's officers and the troops in Jerusalem, the city of David, that those who had rejected the king's command had gone down to the hiding places in the wilderness. Many pursued them and overtook them. They encamped opposite them and prepared for battle against them on the Sabbath day. They said to them, enough of this. Come out and do what the king commands and you will live. But they said, we will not come out, nor will we do what the king commands to profane the Sabbath day. Then the enemy quickly attacked them. But they did not answer them or hurl a stone at them or block up their hiding places. For they said, let us all die in our innocence. Heaven and earth testify for us that you are killing us unjustly. So they attacked them on the Sabbath day and they died with their wives and their children and their livestock to the number of 1,000 people. So the king's men just attacked a bunch of Sabbath keepers and killed them on the Sabbath day. They didn't defend themselves because it was a Sabbath day. Now I would say, I'm not the judge, he is, but it tells us what happens to those that die as a witness for him. So I feel pretty good about it. If we make the kingdom, we get to see these people. But now this isn't the only way to do it as we're fixing to see either. Verse 39 tells us, when Mattathias and his friends learned of it, they mourned for them deeply. And all said to their neighbors, if we do as our kindred have done and refuse to fight with the Gentiles for our lives and for our ordinances, they will quickly destroy us from the earth. So they made this decision that day, let us fight against anyone who comes to attack us on the Sabbath day. Let us not all die as our kindred died in their hiding places. You see, they understood exactly what Yeshua came and taught to us later. That the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. They understood the ox in the ditch long before Yeshua talked about it. And they made the decision. If they come against us on the Sabbath day, we're going to have no choice, or we'll all be destroyed. So although the first, that thousand that were attacked on the Sabbath day, I think acted through faith and through their own righteousness. And I feel okay today about what they did. But I also feel okay about the decision that Mattathias and those with him made. They had an understanding of it different than the other group. I don't think either were wrong. Verse 42. Then there united with them a company of Hasadians, mighty warriors of Israel, all who offered themselves willingly for the law, and all who had become fugitives to escape their troubles joined with them and reinforced them. So now the word's gone out and reinforcements are arriving, saying, hey, these guys are going to fight, and people are showing up. They organized an army and struck down sinners in their anger and renegades in their wrath. The survivors fled to the Gentiles for safety. See there, it says they struck down sinners in their angers and renegades in their wrath. They're striking down the Israelites that have turned away. They're not talking about Gentiles here because it says the survivors fled to the Gentiles for safety. Those who proclaimed to be Israelites and had turned to sin, Mattathias and them are striking them down. So you got no part of Israel. And Mattathias and his friends went around and tore down the altars. They forcibly circumcised all the uncircumcised boys they found within the borders of Israel. So if you were a young man walking around in Israel, they very literally did a circumcised check. And if you weren't, you were fixing to be. They hunted down the arrogant, and the work prospered in their hands. See, a lot of people would think that they're being too bold here, but it doesn't appear to be so, does it? It says the work prospered in their hands. They rescued the law out of the hands of the Gentiles and kings, and they never let the sinner gain the upper hand. Now, they were forcing God's law and covenant on Israel, were they not? Now, I know we preach that it's all about free will. Each man has a choice to follow, and I believe that. But we see a case here where very much they were forcing it on folks. They weren't giving you an option. You had two options. You were either going to follow the covenant and the law or flee to the Gentiles, get out of Israel, one of the two. And we very much should make our assembly that way today. There's a lesson for us here. If we have someone among our assembly who will not follow his laws and his ordinances, guess what? Get out of our piece of Israel. Get out. Because you ain't supposed to be here with us. Now the days drew near for Mattathias to die. And he said to his sons, "Arrogance and scorn have now become strong. It is a time of ruin and furious anger. Now, my children, show zeal for the law." Again, even on his deathbed, he's telling them, show zeal for the law. He ain't saying do it quietly. Be bold about it. "And give your lives for the covenants of our ancestors. Remember the deeds of the ancestors which they did in their generations, and you will receive great honor and an everlasting name. Was not Abraham found faithful when tested? And was it not reckoned to him as righteousness?" We talked about that this morning, did we not? About being tested by God. "Joseph, in the time of his distress, kept the commandments, and he became Lord of Egypt. Phinehas, our ancestor, because he was deeply zealous, received the covenant of everlasting priesthood." This is the second time that Phinehas has been mentioned, and I'm going to remind y'all of him. I think y'all remember who he is. He is the one who drove the spear completely through the Midianite woman and the Hebrew man because they were doing what they ought not do. And God was pleased by it. Joshua, because he fulfilled the command, became a judge in Israel. Caleb, because he testified in the assembly, received an inheritance in the land. David, because he was merciful, inherited the throne of a kingdom forever. Elijah, because a great zeal for the law was taken up into heaven. Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael believed and were saved from the fire. Daniel, because of his innocence, was delivered from the mouth of the lions. And so observe from generation to generation that none of those who put their trust in him will lack strength. So he's telling his sons to live exactly as he's lived up to this point. Do not turn away from Yahweh and his law regardless of what it seems like may happen to you. And he's reminding of them of all the ancestors throughout time, how it worked out for them when they did not turn away. He says, "Do not fear the words of sinners, for their splendor will turn into dung and worms. Today they will be exalted, but tomorrow they will not be found, because they have returned to the dust, and their plans will have perished. My children, be courageous and go strong in the law, for by it you will gain honor. Here's your brother Simeon, who I know is wise in counsel. Always listen to him. He shall be your father." He's saying, let him plan things. He's smart. Listen to what he has to say. And he says, "Here's your brother Judas Maccabeus, has been a mighty warrior from his youth. He shall command the army for you and fight the battle against the peoples. So he told you who the smart one was and who the warrior was, did he not? And he basically said, they're going to be your leaders. He put two of his sons in charge. You shall rally around you all who observe the law and avenge the wronged unto your people. Pay back the Gentiles in full and obey the commands of the law. Then he blessed them and was gathered to his ancestors. He died in the 146th year and was buried in the tomb of his ancestors at Modian. And all Israel mourned for him with great lamentation. So now, the original leader who stood up is gone. But he didn't go without leaving somebody in charge, did he? Then his son Judas, who was called Maccabeus, took command in his place. All his brothers and all who joined his father helped him. They gladly fought for Israel. Now, I do believe that if Mattathias, before he had died, had not have said, Judas is in charge of the army, there could have been contention, couldn't there? It shows that he was a wise man. He appointed the new leader of the army before he died. So you see here now, there's no problem, is there? They all say, okay, Mattathias left him in charge, so they're all following him. He extended the glory of his people like a giant. He put on his breastplate. He bound on his armor of war and waged battles, protecting the camp by his sword. He was like a lion in his deeds, like a lion's cub roaring for prey. He searched out and pursued those who broke the law. He burned those who would trouble his people. Lawbreakers shrank back for fear of him. All the evildoers were confounded, and deliverance prospered by his hand. So he very much took the battle to them. He went looking for them. He didn't wait for them to come and find them and attack. He took it to them. He went and hunted them out. He embittered many kings, but he made Jacob glad by his deeds, and his memory is blessed forever. Now we're talking about Judas Maccabeus here. And it says that his memory is blessed forever. So when you hear people talk about him, and you do around Hanukkah, people talk about him a lot. That's okay. It says here that his memory should be blessed forever for what he did. So it's perfectly okay to talk about Judas Maccabee and the deeds that he did during this time. He went through the cities of Judah. He destroyed the ungodly out of the land. Thus he turned away the wrath from Israel. He was renowned to the ends of the earth. He gathered in those who were perishing. Upon us now gathered together Gentiles and a large force from Samaria to fight against Israel. When Judas learned of it, he went out to meet him, and he defeated and killed him. Many were wounded and fell, and the rest fled. They seized their spoils, and Judas took the sword of Apollyon and used it in the battle for the rest of his life. So we see that Judas has taken over, and he's carrying the battle to them. And through the next couple of chapters that we're not going to read here, through the next couple of chapters, we see battle after battle. And we see times when they're literally outnumbered by thousands and tens of thousands. And Judas attacks. He tells the people over and over, God is with us, don't worry. And he leads the charge. And they always win, over and over. That is the true miracle that happened there. But now let's recount one more time. Why did it all start? It all started because the people of Israel turned away from the law and the covenant. They said, hey, let's join ourselves to the Gentiles and do evil. That's why the whole thing started. But fortunately, there was a remnant who believed in standing up for the law. And Judas was the leader of them now. And they won over and over on odds that were just uncomprehendable when you read. But now we're going to skip to chapter 4, starting in verse 36. After he's won many great battles, and taken over the majority of the land of Israel again. Then Judas and his brother said, "See, our enemies are crushed. Let us go cleanse the sanctuary and dedicate it." So all the army assembled and went to Mount Zion. There they saw the sanctuary desolate, the altar profaned, and the gates burned. In the courts they saw bushes sprung up in a thicket, or as on one of the mountains. They also saw the chambers of the priests in ruins. They tore their clothes and mourned with great lamentation. They sprinkled themselves with ashes and fell face down on the ground. And when the signal was given with the trumpets, they cried out to heaven. Then Judas detailed men to fight against those in the citadel. Until he had cleansed the sanctuary, he chose blameless priests devoted to the law. And they cleansed the sanctuary and removed the defiled stones to an unclean place. They deliberated what to do about the altar of burnt offerings which had been profaned. And they thought it best to tear it down so that it would not be a lasting shame to them that the Gentiles had defiled it. So they tore down the altar and stored the stones in a convenient place on the temple hill until a prophet should come and tell them what to do with them. Now there's a teaching. I don't know whether it's accurate or not. It's hard to say. But in John chapter 10, during this feast of dedication, when Jesus is in the temple, they're on this hill, and the Jews pick up stones to stone him. There's a teaching that these are the very stones that they threatened to stone Jesus with. It could be true. I don't know how we would confirm it, but it could very possibly be true because he certainly was a prophet. Was he not? Moses spoke of the Messiah as the prophet of prophets. But in verse 47, it says, "Then they took unhewn stones, as the law directs, and built a new altar like the former one. They also rebuilt the sanctuary and the interior of the temple and consecrated the courts. They made new holy vessels and brought the lampstand, the altar of incense, and the table into the temple. They offered incense on the altar and lit the lamps on the lampstands, and these gave light in the temple. They placed the bread on the table and hung up the curtains. Thus they finished all the work they had undertaken. Early in the morning on the 25th day of the ninth month, which is the month of Cheslev in the 148th year, they rose and offered sacrifice as the law directs on the new altar of the burnt offerings that they had built. At the very season, on the very day that the Gentiles had proclaimed it, it was dedicated with songs and harps and lutes and cymbals." See, so it was the exact same time of year that it had been taken over by Gentiles that they rededicated it. And it's this time of year that we're in right now. That's why Hanukkah starts Sunday evening. And Hanukkah, by the way, in case anyone's not aware, simply means to dedicate in Hebrew. So that's literally what it's talking about, is the Feast of Dedication. "Now all the people fell on their faces and worshipped and blessed heaven who had prospered them. So they celebrated the dedication of the altar for 8 days and joyfully offered burnt offerings. They offered a sacrifice of well-being and thanksgiving offering. They decorated the front of the temple with golden crowns and small shields. They restored the gates and the chambers for the priests and fitted them with doors. There was very great joy among the people, and the disgrace brought by the Gentiles was removed. Then Judas and his brothers and all the assembly in Israel determined that every year at the season, the days of the dedication of the altar should be observed with joy and gladness for 8 days, beginning with the 25th day of the month of Cheslev." Now, they decreed it. Doesn't say God decreed it, but they decreed that every year we should keep this. Now, I think one of our strongest indications that it is something we should keep is found in John chapter 10. John chapter 10, verses 22 and 23 tells us that it was winter in Jerusalem, the Feast of Dedication was taking place, and Jesus was in the temple walking in Solomon's porch. So very clearly, several hundred years after this, the Messiah took part of the Feast of Dedication. And we're told to walk as he walked. He kept it, why wouldn't we? And besides that, it's a joy and it's an honor and something we get to do. It's not something we have to do. It's something we get to do. I would also like to point out the 8 days. Now, we've all heard the story, the miracle of the oil lasting 8 days. The story of the miracle of the oil lasting 8 days didn't come about till 200 AD, 200 years after Christ. There is no confirmation of that story in any of the early writings, the original writings, about the Feast of Dedication. But we do know why it lasted 8 days. In 2 Maccabees chapter 10, in verse 6, tells us why it lasted 8 days. It says, they celebrated it for 8 days with rejoicing in the manner of the festival of booths, remembering how not long before during the festival of booths they had been wandering in the mountains and caves like wild animals. They kept it for 8 days because they had not been able to keep Sukkot that year. So they belatedly did it when they dedicated the temple. But they did tell us to do it every year in that same time, that appointed time for it. So today we get to do both. Like I said a while ago, we don't have to, but we get to. So when you hear the miracle of the oil, I'm not saying God couldn't have made 1 day's supply of oil last for eight. I don't know, I wasn't there. But I find it interesting that none of the original stories of the Feast of Dedication mention it if it happened. You think they would bring it up. So while it's an interesting story, it's told in Tamal and a few other places, it didn't come about until several hundred years after the occurrence is when that story was first heard. So I wouldn't put a lot of stock in it. Just saying. But the main thing for us to remember about Hanukkah as we enter into it is take a few lessons away. One, if you turn away from God and deny Him, bad things can befall you, because that's what started the whole deal. Number two, no matter how small a group of people you are, if you follow Him and you adhere to His laws and His ordinances, you can overcome any amount of people. That is the miracle to remember about Hanukkah as we celebrate it and to teach our children about. Never be worried about numbers, because if He's with you, you're a mighty number. So, that is our message on Hanukkah today. Like I said, as Paul Harvey would say, the rest of the story. Let's stand together and say our blessings. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make His face shine on you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up His countenance on you and give you peace. Amen.